for me has always been challenging, because I've always wondered, how do I grow my faith? How do I become a faith person? How do I become a faith hero? It's one of my long life projects. We're basing the series on Hebrews 12 verse 1, which says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run the race marked out for us. The previous chapter listed people who had lived by faith. And these people did all sorts of things. I have a list. They believed the word of God. They brought offerings. By faith, they built. By faith, they made homes in foreign lands. By faith, they offered sacrifices to God. They planned for the future for their children. By faith, they took risks. They obeyed an unseen God. They chose to suffer for their God. They left their past behind. They spoke a blessing over their children and grandchildren. They traveled to an unknown land in obedience. They believed in the supernatural. They gave instructions indicating that they believed the words that had been spoken over them. If you go through Hebrews 11, you will find that this is what these people did. I looked over my own life and I wondered, who are the faith giants? I call them faith giants. And there's so many, and so much I learned, including my grandmother, my husband, my mother, my aunties, my friends, so many people, my children. My daughter is pointing at herself, so my children. And from these people, I learned humility. I've learned generosity. I've learned about wisdom from above. I've learned about how to champion others. I've learned about how to love self. I've learned how to focus on Christ alone. I've learned that he still has healing power. I've learned about evangelism from my mother. I've learned about true Christian love from Stephen's grandmother. I've learned about humor and freedom in Christ. I've learned about the power of worship, about sacrificial love, about true love of God, about prayer, about prophecy, about grace, about having a kingdom mindset. I've learned about servant leadership, boldness, vulnerability, and about teaching the word of God. I have learned so much from these faith giants. Since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. So, a few years ago, it was 3 a.m., and I was doing some work. I couldn't sleep. There was lots of emails to attend to, and I felt overwhelmed. And I decided to tell God how overwhelmed I felt. So I took one of my journals because I like writing. And the idea was I was going to write a list of all the reasons why I was overwhelmed. I needed God to see the list. So I opened my journal. And as I opened it, I saw something from, you know, some reading I'd done. And the first words I saw was, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." And I thought, whoa, what if God was saying that to me? He had said it to somebody else, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But I thought, what if he was saying that to me? What if he was saying that to you? The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. How would that change my life? In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32, this one line caught my eye. It said, "And what more shall I say? I do not have the time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David, Samuel, and the prophets. But I just wanted to focus on that one name, Gideon." Just to give you a bit of history, Judges chapter 6, from verse 1 to 11, we find the children of Israel in this pattern. They had a tendency to do evil. And then God would be displeased with them, and he would hand them over to their enemies to do what they wanted with them. Then they would cry out, and then he would send someone to rescue them. So in Judges chapter 6, we see the same thing happening. God sends Gideon. So the Midianites were the enemies of the children of Israel. They were bullies. Whenever the children of Israel would plant crops, the Midianites would come and take over and just leave them impoverished with nothing. No livestock, no crops. Gideon is one of my favorite characters in the Bible. And the reason he's one of my favorite characters is because I can relate to him. When I see Gideon, I see myself. So as a child, I was very timid. I was naturally a compliant child. I was a people pleaser. Some might say the teacher's pet. I had fears at school. I remember in year two, sitting down, we're all sitting in a circle, I needed the toilet. I was not willing to raise my hands. I would rather suffer in silence than ask the teacher if I could go to the toilet. I remember in year five, I wanted to give an answer to a question, but I was too scared to ask a question because what if I got the answer wrong? Back in those days, if you got the answer wrong, you got a beating. I wasn't willing to risk it. My fear went on even in high school. I was chosen as head girl. Now, the reason I was chosen as head girl in my school was not because I had true, great leadership. It was because I was a nice girl. That's why they chose me. I am convinced. Because I was very timid. And as head girl, I had certain duties. And I remember how scared I was of the matron. Because during recess, the girls had to line up. And it was my job as head girl to make sure they stood in a straight line. It was my job to make sure that they did not have nail polish on. It was my job to make sure they had the right hairstyle, nothing fancy. It was my job to make sure that they did the right thing. And the matron, I can still see it, told me off in front of all these girls because I just would go to them and say, excuse me, do you mind moving this way? Excuse me, do you mind moving? I just didn't know how to be bold and speak and just say what I needed to say. Fast forward 10 years, I am in Adelaide and I'm doing my foundation course and I am in this class and I had to give an impromptu speech. And the topic I had been given was what I did on Sunday. I was so excited because I was going to tell them all about church and all about God. As it got closer and closer for me to speak, my heart started to pound. By the time I had to go up to the front, I could barely walk. I stood in front of that classroom, and right at the back, there happened to be this guy that I really liked. And he had this look on his face of embarrassment. He put his face on his hand, and that didn't help my situation. Basically, how that whole thing ended was with, I think there was four, because I can't recall, four people had to walk me out of that classroom because my eyes had shut. I had a panic attack. So they had to walk me out like this. That's how bad it was. So that was the level of my anxiety. I want to go back to Judges chapter 6 from verse 11 to 16. If we could put that one up, please. The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Abyssrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." "Pardon me, my Lord," Gideon replied, "but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our ancestors told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?" "Pardon me, my Lord," Gideon replied, "but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my family." The Lord answered, "I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive." Gideon replied, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, give me a sign that it is really you talking to me." My first key point is word of release. There's a word of release, and I call it that because God spoke the word, and that word's purpose is to release something inside of you. I believe every word that was spoken to Gideon, God speaks to you this morning. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. I believe that that's the word God is saying to each one of us. There's two things there. The Lord is with you, and you're a mighty warrior. So I looked up what warrior is, and I came to the words brave, experienced fighter. So basically, God is saying we are to think and walk like we are brave and experienced fighters. That is the posture we are to hold. It then says, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? God is saying go, because within you there's a strength. And by the way, am I not sending you? God is reminding us is that he's the one who's sending us. So that's our foundation, that knowledge that everything that we do, every place we occupy, everywhere that we go because he has first sent us. I will be with you and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. God is saying it's a done deal. It's a done deal. He's already telling us the end. Before we even start, he's saying, you win. You're in the winning team. So as children of God, followers of Christ, our posture, our mindset has to be one of victory. Everything that we do, we have to believe that we're already in a place of victory. The words of release were in response to doubts expressed by Gideon. Gideon had his doubts. It says, pardon me, in verse 13, my Lord, but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonders? So Gideon goes on and says all these things, and then he starts talking about, you know, about his clan and how it's the weakest, and basically all these reasons why he should be disqualified from the job. He's saying, I am weak. You know, when I was in high school, I joined the debate team. I never debated. I joined the debate team because I liked talking. I was timid, but I liked talking. And I would go to these debate team meetings. We'd go to different schools. Every single time, at the end of it all, I would go to the teacher and I'll start telling her everything that I was going to say. Everything I was going to say if I had been brave enough. But I never debated. That's one. I don't have many regrets in life, but that was one of my greatest debates. Regrets. So I used to hide. Gideon used to hide, and he had reasons why. He could explain why. He says, you abandoned us. You see, because the bullies came. You see, the bullies, the Midianites came, and Gideon is found in a wine press threshing wheat. You don't thresh wheat in a wine press. You make wine there. But he was hiding the grain from the enemies. But guess what? It doesn't matter where you find yourself because God will locate you. God still found Gideon. He had an assignment for him. He still found him, even though he was in a place of hiding. So Gideon goes on to say, how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my family. He's saying, I'm insignificant. I'm a nobody. I wonder if you've been in that place where you think, well, I'm insignificant. I have nothing. I can't do that. Why you disqualify yourself? I've had a bit of experience with that, looking at my weaknesses. My color, I'm black. My gender, I'm female. My tribe, I belong to a tribe called the Kalanga, right? So that's a tribe that was looked down upon. My size, all my life, most of my life, I grew up as an overweight child, and I was an overweight adult for many, many years. Still a bit, but not too much. But that was me, right? And those were the things that I used to disqualify myself. I remember in regards to color. I never knew that's what I was doing, but I recognized it many years ago. Every time I would go to a place like Woolies or Coles, I would look at the counter to see the race of the person who was serving. It was subconscious. If they were white, I would try and look for someone else. If they were Asian, I would go there. Because I felt safe. Right? If they were Asian, African, anything else but white. But that just had to do with, you know, I come from a country where, you know, we were colonized. So there was that stuff happening in the background. So there was a fear there that what if I get to the counter and something happens and maybe my card declines and then I've got to explain myself to this white person. This was all happening in the background. So those are some of the things I was using to disqualify myself. And I wonder for you, what do you use to disqualify yourself? My third point has to do with, what if it's not God? For many years, I remained in this space of what if. You see, I didn't want to get it wrong. So I camped in the what if space. Until I read a book by Bill Hybels, The Power of a Whisper, and I was introduced to this idea of God whispers. God whispers. And that book really spoke to me in a powerful way because he was explaining that God is constantly speaking to us. You know, you don't need to feel like God doesn't speak to me because God is constantly speaking, but he speaks in different ways. But sometimes we're looking for God to speak to us the way he speaks to our neighbor. But there's so many different ways that he communicates with us. You know, I used to get dreams, vision, and now God whispers. And I never knew what to do with them. Because I felt like God was talking to me, but I didn't know what to do with the things I was hearing. I was writing a lot of stuff down, but I got to a point where I got fed up. And I asked God, please stop talking to me. Please stop giving me dreams. Can I just be a normal Christian? That's what I said to God. I went to our pastor at the time, and I said, I need help. I'm very frustrated. I feel like God is talking to me, but I'm not sure, and I just want him to stop. And he said to me, well, basically, what you want is to just sit down and be like someone who's in an antique shop. And you're just looking at all these things. And when he said that, I was like, no, that's not the kind of faith I want. Where you're just sitting there with all this stuff that you believe God has given you, and you're not doing anything with it, but just admiring it. The next week, he challenged me to stand in front of a crowd and answer some questions. And I regretted going to speak to him because I just wanted it to be just our little conversation. But he wanted to challenge me. And I'm thankful that he challenged me because that allowed me to be able to do something like this, speak in front of people. I just want to share a poem that I wrote. And it's called Cripple Effect. Have you ever felt so trapped by your own mind in your own body, powerless, helpless, not sure where to turn, stuck in a frozen state, immovable, untouchable, not because you're great, but because you're scared? Have you ever been stuck, having all it takes, but nothing to move it with, knowing what you want, but unable to face it, rendered powerless, helpless, running out of breath, running out of steam, not sure where to turn, how to turn? I have moved slowly and handled that, taking longer but moving still. That I can handle, but fear, I motion to fear and say, crippling fear, I cannot tolerate you. I am trapped in my own mind. Get me out, someone out there, please help me out. Crippling fear, I cannot, I will not tolerate. Fear will cripple you. Gideon was fearful. That's why he hid. I wonder if you're hiding from anything yourself. I used to love a show called Days of Our Lives. Some of you might remember it. One of my favorite, all-time favorite shows. You remember it? A few smiles there. And when it would start, it would say, like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. Do you remember that? Yeah? I'll go back to that. So, I wondered, as I read the story of Gideon, why was Gideon on the list of faith heroes? Because it says, I don't even have the time to tell you about Gideon. And I was like, what did Gideon do? We know that at the end, we know how it ends. He defeats the Midianites. In Judges chapter 7, Gideon is now going to war, and he's asked by God to cut down an army from thousands to 300 men, because God was saying, I don't want the Israelites to take the credit. Thank you. I don't want them to take the credit for what I have done. Gideon obeys. He cuts the army to 300. He's still scared, but he overhears that he's going to win. He overhears somebody interpreting a dream, saying Gideon wins. And so with that, Gideon runs and goes to war. It says in Judges 7, 15 to 17, when Gideon heard the dream and its interpretation, he bowed down and worshipped. He turned to the camp of Israel and called out, "Get up! The Lord has given the Midianite camp into your hands." Dividing the 300 men into three companies, he placed trumpets and empty jars in the hands of all of them with torches inside. Listen to this. This is Gideon. He says, "Watch me," he told them. "Follow my lead. When I get to the edge of the camp, do exactly as I do." As I read that, I said, thought to myself, is this the same dude? Is this the same bloke? Is this the same brother? Any other terms you want to use? Is this the same fella? Thank you, Stephen. The same fella, dude, bloke, brother, that was in the wine press, is now saying, "Follow me." Despite his timidity, Gideon made a series of decisions. That's why he's in that book. That is why, sorry, that's Siri. That is why he is a faith hero. He made a series of decisions that led to him finally being in a position to fight and win the war. A series of decisions. Gideon was not afraid to ask God questions. You gotta love Siri. Oh, series, that's what it is. Oh. God made a series of decisions that led to him finally being in a position to fight. Gideon was not afraid, number one, to ask God questions. That was a decision. He was not afraid to ask for signs. That was a decision. He was not afraid to have the necessary conversations. That was a decision. With each decision, he demonstrated faith and he obeyed God. That is why his name was in there. I'll just get the band up, please. There's a show I used to like to watch called Where Are They Now? I used to like watching that show because they look at people's lives and then they fast forward many years and they say, "Where are they now?" And that's what I was thinking about Gideon. Where is he now? Well, what we know about Gideon is that he defeated the Midianites. He also became one of the judges. That's why he's in the book of Judges. Where are they now? For myself, from that timid girl to being involved in anxiety management work, which is a big part of my work, and being involved in public speaking is a big part of my work as well. Only God has put me in that position, but it took a series of decisions. I just want to share one last poem. It's called Time. Like I said, I used to like watching Days of Our Lives. Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. Time. Here's the thing, Lord. It's late at night and I am tired, but I've got this feeling that you want to show me something. So I'm sensing that you want to talk. You want to talk about time. Time is of the essence. Whether I move or remain stationed, time moves. time waits for no man, for no woman. Time does not wait for me to pray about things, to pierce through glass doors to check if all is clear. It does not wait for me to call and talk and check with so and so. There are windows which open at certain times, but they will not always be open for us to look through. There are doors through which people enter and leave. Doors can be locked. I get to open and close as many as I wish, if only I would see them all before me. So, Lord, may I be aware of time. May I see the windows within the time. May I also know when a door is closed to me. Tick, talk, tick, talk, blink, chances, blink, chances gone. Blink, options, blink, options gone. Eyes to see and ears to hear. Sense to know when time is staring. Time. I'd just like to finish off with this. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, look around you. Who are your faith heroes? Who are the faith giants in your world? We are tangled. And that word is saying, throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. What are you tangled by? For me, it was fear. And God said, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. So I had to throw it off. And what is that for you? Go ahead and make decisions. Go ahead and take actions. Even in doubt, take action. Move. Run your own race that has been marked out. When we're watching the Olympics, my favorite part, when we're watching the races, my favorite part is when you see that guy, usually it's a guy, right, who's lagging behind everyone. Oh, he was at the front and then he trips and he falls. But then he gets up. And as he gets up, guess what happens to those who are witnessing? What do? They cheer him on, don't they? They cheer him on. Why? Because they believe that he can make it. And that is what the great cloud of witnesses is meant to do in our lives, is to cheer us on. That's why it's saying, since we are surrounded, let us. We are surrounded, therefore, let us run. Right? Let us let everything fall off. So the people that are in your life, that are faith heroes, they're there to teach you. They're there to be your mentors. They're there to help you finish the race and cheer you on. Faith and fear cannot coexist. One has to give. My prayer this morning is that fear is the one that gives, not faith. I'd just like to take this moment for anyone here